I tell you to be different and creative and think this way. A much used business cliche. Kayla.
What is outside the box?
You got it.
We're flying high with the wings and talking all things lacrosse. You're now listening to the Outside the Box podcast right here on Underground Sports Philadelphia. Welcome in to episode number 283 of the allegedly award-nominated, honorably mentioned, number 9 NCAA-ranked, viewable on YouTube, and partially coming to you live from the ATL. It's the Outside the Box podcast, the official lacrosse podcast on the Underground Sports Philadelphia Podcast Network. It's KB coming at you from Underground Studios and coming to you by way of Hotlanta. He's on a connecting flight, potentially to Alaska, if you don't subscribe to the YouTube channel. Coach Deej.
What up? I'm not going to Alaska.
And
I'm
brother, we somehow just lost a subscriber, so you're that much closer. You need to get everybody in Atlanta to subscribe.
They need you now. Where's that dot card when I need it? I'm never missing another flight again.
Yeah, we will get into why Deej is still in Atlanta. We will get into recapping everything that went down in Minnesota. We will also preview Fairfield. I'm going to be in Fairfield this weekend, so if you're there, come say what's up. I'm going to be getting these fits off, and I'm pissed that you unfortunately won't be able to be there, so I'm not going to have anybody there to document said fits. So our good pal and hopefully our cameraman in Foxborough later this year, Mr. Patty Pitts, said that I should try to attempt to get Dan Orlovsky to take my fit picks.
Or RJ. I mean, RJ would do it.
True, true. But how funny would it be if it's like photo cred Dan Orlovsky?
That would be crazy.
He did like my tweet about the water dogs the other day, and he doesn't follow me, so shout out to
subscribers through the roof.
Through the roof. Cooking. Shout out to RE Garbage. We're also going to get into these ridiculous NLL trades that have happened over the past couple of days because you and I have texted Bob and everything, and we're just like, what the actual hell is going on? These trades are insane. We're going to get
zero sense.
None. But before we get started, make sure you guys are following us on the socials. That includes Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and TikTok at OTBLaxPod. Follow me on Twitter at KBIZZL311 and on Threads and Instagram at KBIZZLE11. DJ, you had a concert?
Kind of. Long story.
And you can follow me on TikTok at KB Underground. I said I will post my, I will start consistently posting on TikTok when I get to 100 followers. I will start doing TikTok content. So, follow me there, KB Underground, but KBIZZLE11 on Threads and Instagram, KBIZZL311 on Twitter. Follow DJ on Twitter at @SCS_NextGreat.
Does this count? A lot of counts.
Just the number has to say 100.
Okay, fair, because, I mean, I'm over 100, so I think you'll get there relatively quickly.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, six
and I don't post
podcasts, so. Subscribe to the podcast feed, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If we reach a certain threshold on Spotify followers, maybe we'll start posting the video version onto Spotify. Because we have the ability to do that, apparently. So, Follow us on Spotify if you want the video. If you're a Spotify user, let us know if you want the video version on Spotify. It will always be on YouTube, youtube.com/@undergroundsportsphiladelphia. We're at 515 subscribers right now. Don't know how that dropped because we're just posting good content on there. And the main pod went up, which is the number one most popular show on the YouTube channel. So we lost a subscriber. So you got to subscribe. We are 485 subscribers away from DJ not having to move to Alaska. So if you don't want that to happen, subscribe to the YouTube channel. That's where you get full video episodes of every podcast on our network, interviews, live streams, clips, shorts, all that good stuff. YouTube.com/@undergroundsportsphiladelphia. And get your merch, phiapparel.co. That's the website. They have the best merch. They are the number one merch partners we have ever had. They are the best in the game. Rep OTB all summer long, all year long, truly. Shirts, hoodies. We're working on a new merch capsule for the company, too. That will include OTB merch, so you don't want to miss out on that. Go to phiapparel.co so you can stand out in the crowd like Deej and I do, and use code UNDERGROUND for 10% off any and all merch orders. It's the most effective and direct way to support everything we're doing here at Underground Sports Philadelphia, so go get your OTB merch. Tweet at us, tag us on Instagram when you get your merch, because we want to see where you're rocking it from, and go merch up. Deej, how did you miss your flight? Give us the story.
We just weren't up in time. We got to the luggage gate with like 5 minutes to spare. And we're like, hey, can you push us through? And they're like, you see that line? Nah.
That's so crazy.
Yeah, they put us in it. And the next available flight is tomorrow morning. So another day in Atlanta.
Machi. I forget the restaurant I went to. There was a restaurant I went to when I went to Atlanta for the PLL in 2019. Such good food. I loved Atlanta.
Like, I mean, I haven't had bad food here, and it's been great.
It's one of my favorite cities I've been to.
Outside the Phil.
Oh, the Phil is dope. Home. That's home base.
It is.
Philly's number one, no matter what. Atlanta probably
right now it's top five.
It falls in my top six if we want to go.
Right now it's top five. I don't think I've been enough places to. Like, Chicago's obviously a top three for me, but I'm, like, there so
Phoenix
often.
Is in my top five.
See, I haven't been to Phoenix yet, so I have no clue.
Phoenix is, like, desert Philadelphia. It's so nice.
Sounds fantastic.
Atlanta's in there. Low-key. Albany's in there. I love Albany.
Albany's not bad. I don't mind Boston either. Boston's but, like, I know bad. You hate Boston for other reasons.
Yeah. Boston's okay.
Yeah.
The outside, like the surrounding cities of Boston, I think are far superior.
I mean, personally, I don't mind the city of Columbus.
Yeah. Columbus is fun to go to.
There's other things in Columbus I don't like, but Columbus is pretty cool.
Denver's in my top five.
I've heard Denver's really nice.
Denver's like one of the cleanest cities I've ever been to. Like the air quality, I was like, I felt like I was breathing like newborn air.
That's that real air.
This is insane. Like it was clean. Like when I went out west, I don't know if it's just because it's like typically most of the states out there, it's a drier, warmer climate. Nobody smokes cigarettes out west. When I was out there in 2016. Fantastic. I maybe saw three people in a week and a half time in four different states smoking cigarettes or smoking in general. Like there was no, it was like no air pollution. It was unbelievable.
Oh, they smoke all right.
But it wasn't like in public. Like I didn't see it actively happening.
Yeah.
I think it, because mostly in Colorado too, like it's just normal. So like you just do it wherever and like nobody cares. But like I didn't see anything. No vapes, and like vapes weren't like huge then either because it was like 2016. But cigarette smokers maybe saw three max in four different states out there.
That's awesome. I have a feeling Seattle is so high. Oh, it's going to be so high on my list.
Seattle's
I haven't made it there,
on
but
my bucket list.
Yeah. I mean, DC, I don't know where DC falls.
Nah.
It's pretty low though.
Outside of like the tourist attractions.
It's pretty low.
I can't stand going to DC.
No, there's nothing really good about DC.
Outside of Championship Game 2021.
Yeah, and like tourist attractions and yeah. stuff like that. But
like going outside to monuments and stuff is very fun, and like the museums and stuff. But outside of that,
there's nothing there.
Ah, it's a no. Not worth the time. Yeah, let us know your favorite cities to visit. YouTube comment section. This is how we get the clips. This is how clips happen on social. We had a discussion with Patty Pitts on the main pod last night. I think you'd agree with this. Top five feeling in the world ever, getting your hair cut.
Best feeling ever. No kiss.
Top five, hands down.
Like, I never post on social media, but you can guarantee I'm posting a Snapchat story every 2 weeks on Friday when I get my hair cut. Oh, yeah. Like, it's a guarantee.
Look at the fade. If you're not watching,
that thing's fresh. That thing's fresh.
It's a rebirth phase.
It is. It's a total rebirth. You come out a whole new man.
You get your hair cut, it's a top five feeling. Like,
especially when you're single, you want to just drive around the whole state, let everybody see you.
And mine, because I go to a salon because of like the way my hair is. I have calyx, and I only trust certain people with my hair. I get the shampoo treatment before I get my hair cut. Nothing feels better than somebody else digging their nails into your scalp. It is the great, like, it's just as good, if not better, than the haircut itself.
Oh, I know.
It's unbelievable. It's one of those things too. Like, they always say, like, you're not ticklish to yourself, and like you can like endure more for yourself because you know your pain tolerances and stuff. When you scratch your head, it's like, okay, like this feels nice. But when somebody else is doing it, because it's somebody else, they don't know like your statute of limitations on like your tolerances of stuff. It's undefeated.
Oh yeah, that's one thing I miss about my ex-girlfriend being a hairdresser. She would wash my hair. Oh my god, it felt so good, so good.
One thing I'm gonna miss about last year's Fairfield and this year's Fairfield is you're not gonna be there. But before we get into Fairfield, we got to recap everything that happened in Minnesota. Wild weekend, very fun weekend. I was in all the press conferences and got some very fun moments in those to recap everything that happened. It's been a while since we've had a PLL weekend recap. Water Dogs win 10-7 over Chrome. Cannons put a shellacking on Atlas, 19-12. Redwoods, big-time win over Chaos, 13-8. Archers, big-time win over Whipsnakes. And the trend continues, DJ. I put it out on Twitter, put it out on Threads. Whipsnakes are now 1-5 since 2019, not including the bubble, since the inception of the league now. 1-5 in the week following them playing the Redwoods.
I am just a weird stat guy. I don't know where I pulled that out of. We were just sitting there, and I was like, I don't think they've ever done well afterward. Like, it just was a thought that randomly popped in my head. And they're awful after playing the Redwoods. I don't know what it is. I don't know if they expound all their energy. I don't know if they are
riding high.
The
only time it's worked out for them recently was the one year, was it 2021, when Redwoods played Whipsnakes in the quarterfinals, and then Whipsnakes ended up winning in the semifinals.
Mm-hmm.
The one win, though, Deej, is in 2019 in the regular season. Since 2021, the last 3 years, 0-5.
After playing the Redwoods in the regular season, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Nuts. Wild stat.
But the Redwoods are like 0-5, that same space against the Whipsnakes. So is it really that crazy?
Hey, you take them where you get them.
Yeah.
Water Dogs played a great game. We said it. Jake Caraway was going to have a great game with the two big-time defenders out for Chrome. Michael Sowers had a great game passing the ball. Kieran also had a great game up top. Ethan Walker, the big four on the Water Dogs offense, came and performed. They didn't have to do too much. They win 10-7. Chrome, we were talking about it right before we started recording. The inconsistency of just the revolving door of their offense, I think, is a huge part of why they are currently sitting at the bottom of the table at 1-3 and a -8 goal differential. the discourse on the internet too about Sam Hanley is very funny to me. I'm like, the inconsistency of the offense is why Sam Hanley partially has not been able to get going. And I view it very much, and sure, when he was a rookie, he got injured, so he didn't play as much. But I remember the same type of discourse happening in 2021 when Michael Sowers played in the one regular season game before he got hurt, and everybody was like, he looks so different, he looks so slow. That's because in college, Michael Sowers used the unlimited time of that shot clock to set up his plays and get ready and all that kind of stuff, and he needed that adjustment period, and he's adjusted perfectly fine. Look at Michael Sowers now. He's an all-star, he's a champion, he's a championship MVP. He's totally okay. Some of these guys coming from the college game to the pros sometimes need that adjustment period, and when you couple that with this Chrome team is just continuing to have roster adjustments one way or another for whatever reason, whether it's a wedding, whether it's military obligations, whether it's an injury. If you're a young player, that's going to throw you off your game a little bit. You're not going to have time to get in a rhythm and have consistency with your teammates.
I mean, consistency is part of it, of course. But like at this level, it's slightly different. I mean, these guys can play. Like, they can shoot, they can pass. Like, that's not too much of a problem, taking a week off here and there. Like, that doesn't mess with their game too much. I think Chrome's biggest issue is they're not putting guys in a position to win. Like, obviously, Sam Hanley's good. He's big. He's fast. He's strong. But he's not going to be able to take a pole as a rookie. Right in. Like, that's just not going to happen. And they want him to, like, he's dodging on a pole almost every time he touches the ball. Like, why is he not getting any short stick matchups at his size? The Redwoods do a really good job of that, putting Charlie Bertrand, the most recent curse, Sergio Perkovic, Miles Jones, all these guys get short stick matchups, so they have an opportunity to dodge on a short stick. They don't always get open, but they get the opportunity to do so. That's a huge part in getting your midfielders going. Like, you can't expect them to just beat a pole every time. Like, we saw that problem last year with Jules Henningberg on the Redwoods. He was being asked to dodge on a pole every dodge. And I mean, it was working because he was a former attackman, but at the same time, once they took a step back and they started getting him some two-man game or some game where he was going against a short stick and dodging straight in, things started to really open up for him and the rest of the offense. It's the same thing. I mean, Logan Wisnowskis, last year they were doing a really good job of getting into some two-man with him and getting him a short stick. This year they've been just giving him the ball and letting him go solo and ISO against a pole, one of the better poles in the league because he's one of their best attackmen. Like, it's just not there cohesively in terms of strategy and getting people in positions to win their matchups, force a slide, get an open guy. It's kind of just ISO ball, which doesn't work in basketball, so it's not going to work in lacrosse.
The revolving door of guys coming in and out of the lineup, whether it's Heacock, Dylan Malloy, Jesse King's coming back this week. The lineup just keeps changing. I think more so than any other team this year up top, they've had the most changes across the board, and that, I think that can mess with your rhythm a little bit too when you're like, oh, like, I'm ready to go and play, and then it's like, oh, this guy's out. I'm ready to go. Oh, Heacock's out, and we don't have him, you know, coming out of the midfield. Dylan Malloy's at a wedding, and he's now on the reserve roster, and that's somebody we were typically used to having, you know, in this offense to couple with Logan, and Nick Turn hasn't been there, and then Nick Turn's back, and he's trying to get his legs under him in an almost must-win game for Chrome last week. It's been a lot of just inconsistencies, and like you said, that gets coupled in with, you know, not putting guys in the right positions to be successful. That's an inconsistency from the coaching staff. So they got to be better across the board. Obviously, they were missing their top two defensemen last week too, so that plays a part in a lot of aspects from that side of the ball.
I want to touch on that for a second. Like, that, in my opinion, is why they lost last week. Like, I think they had enough offensively, and the offense was doing okay most of the game. There were some times where they stalled out from time to time, or very slow and stagnant, kind of standing around. But for the most part,
brought that up in the press conference too. He said that they've been slow and they've gotten off to slow starts, and like, the offense just hasn't been as fluid as they want it to be.
Which is a problem, but especially when you're playing a team like the Water Dogs, who are attack heavy, to lose two of your starting deep holes, you're already behind, in my opinion, 4 or 5 goals.
And you can't go down 7-1 at halftime to team.
I mean, going into the game, to me, the scoreboard was 4 or 5-0 at the start of the game without JT and Jesse when you're playing Kieran, Jake, and Michael. Like that, that's given. So you're already down 4-0, and then your offense isn't going either. That's how you end up down 7-1 in the first quarter. They're not making the right steps to protect themselves. I think Connor Farrell has done an awesome job this year. Like, I think he's kept up with his pace from last year and has given them plenty of opportunities on offense, but they can't hold the ball long enough or, you know, score enough goals to get some momentum, and then they just end up fading out.
Yeah, I'm looking here just to see. I mean, Chrome shot terribly in this game. Shooting percentage was 18.4%. Shots on goal were 57.9, which I think is, I mean, both teams, I think, shot a little bit below league average. I'm not exactly sure what the overall league average is, but typically when I'm looking at the box scores, going into press conferences and stuff, a really successful day is, like, shot on goal percentage is, like, in the 60%. Both teams shot under 60% in this one. Chrome also had some uncharacteristic turnovers in this game. They had 23 turnovers. Like, some of them were just like, what are you doing? If they didn't turn the ball over like six of those, they probably win this game. They won the ground ball game. Connor won 90% of the faceoffs, or Chrome won 90% of the faceoffs. I should say, I don't know if anybody else took a faceoff for Chrome, but Connor won 18 of 19. And then,
nah, he took them off. He had one faceoff loss. Yeah, they might be in the hottest of seats right now.
Oh, 100%. They're in last place. They have a negative goal differential.
I just,
Atlas, they've scored 39 goals this year.
Yeah.
Which is by far the lowest. The next lowest in the league is Chaos at 44. But you look at what Chaos is doing defensively, and they're able to couple, you know, that and prevent guys from scoring. Plus, you have the best goalie on the planet. So that helps, but 39 goals is not going to cut it through 4 game weeks.
I think the only team that's in a scarier position is the Whipsnakes.
I'll do you one better.
And I only say that because I believe they have another game against Chrome this year.
I'll check for you.
And the only team they beat this year is Redwoods, and I don't think they play Redwoods again. Like, Whipsnakes have been... They're having trouble closing games out, which has never really been a problem for them in the past. A lot of times they've been coming back and winning games toward the end, or if they are up big, they're able to fend people off. But they've had a very tough time closing out games this year and letting people back in.
Whipsnakes play Chrome in Baltimore in a couple of weeks at the beginning of August.
And if they lose to Chrome again,
they have two chaos left. They have Archers left on the schedule, and they play Cannons the last week of the regular season.
And if they don't get Matt Dunn back relatively soon, Michael Earhart is also hurt.
Rambo is questionable again this week.
Like, I mean, their offense has been putting up points, and that's not the problem. But if they can't sustain defensively and they lose to Chrome again, who they've had a very tough time beating also recently, they might end up in last and not make the playoffs. Because I'm just going to be, I definitely don't see them beating the Archers. Like, that's just too tough of a matchup. I think they beat Atlas this weekend, who's also in a very tough position, but I don't see them.
Let's play Water Dogs.
Yeah, that's right. But I do see them beating Atlas at some point when they play, but that'll also still be a tough matchup. That's going to be a tough matchup.
Atlas has a game in hand against them. I think that's the only time they played this year, actually.
Yeah.
I don't think they play Atlas again.
Okay.
They play Chaos twice.
I don't think they win either one of those, as of right now.
At best, they split. They're not going to win both.
I don't know if they split, unless Rambo comes back. That defense is
going to be alive. That's what I'm saying, like, at best, like, best case scenario for them is a split.
Like, Atlas, Chrome, Whipsnakes are...
You tell
and
me.
I just think Whipsnakes are in the worst position because of how they've been recently. I don't know.
Tell me which schedule you'd rather have remaining rest of the season. Water Dogs, Chaos, Chrome, Chaos again, Archers, Cannons. That's the Whipsnake schedule remaining. Or would you rather have this schedule? Chaos, Chrome, Archers, Water Dogs, Cannons, Redwoods.
The second. And I say that because you have Chaos and then you have Cannons and Redwoods. So you have Chaos early where they're still figuring their things out and they haven't hit their groove yet. You have a chance to steal a win there. And then Redwoods and Cannons historically don't play well down the stretch. They're both having very different seasons than they had in the past, but everybody is still expecting them to taper off at some point, and it's normally toward the end of the season. So you're in a favorable position with that matchup where your two or three middle games that you have left are going to be very tough, but your outstanding three that are on the outsides are extremely winnable. Whereas you look at what the Whipsnakes have left, Chaos twice after they've probably already hit their groove, tough. Their offense is going to be in sync, and their defense is one of the best in the country. Like, we know this. Their defense has been one of the best in the league since 2019, and then you add Blaze to that. It's going to be tough to beat them once they get rolling. But they do have Archers and Cannons, who also taper off normally toward the end of the year. So, I mean, they're not in a terrible position. I just think where the playing Chaos twice after they've already kind of warmed up and then still having a game against the Archers and Water Dogs in there is tough.
That secondary schedule I listed for you is the team that I think is in the most trouble alongside Chrome, and that's Atlas.
Atlas.
They are in hot water. Because not only from just a gameplay perspective, there's a lot of proving to do from the standpoint of, like, you made these moves for a reason. And sure, it's rookies and everything, but their defense has been god awful.
I don't. Okay, so as a coach,
like, Gavin's been good as a one on one, but, like, collectively as a unit, their defense has not been what I'm sure Coach Pressler would say has not been what the expectation has been, and he has said that.
So I don't think they're playing great. But I don't think they're playing bad. I don't think they've gotten the play that they've gotten from Jack and Cannon in the past. And I think that's a big deal. You can play really good defense and force nice, like, force shots that should be savable, but if your goalie isn't saving them, it doesn't matter. Like, there have been some possessions when, you know, I can think of a few even in the game they won against the Whipsnakes where they played really good D, and then Jack and Cannon just let up a bad shot.
And they barely won that game.
And they barely won that game.
Easily be 0-4 right now.
And, like, and I'm not saying this because, you know, the Due Review and being Drake Porter stands or anything, but the younger guys are doing better. We've pretty much seen the Cannon switch over to Curse solely. So
Jack,
he's probably
and Drake in this game position. Effectively had the same save percentage. Drake had a 41.7% save percentage. Jack had 42.1%. Drake had 5 saves, Jack had 8. Jack faced 12 shots, Drake faced 7.
And he only played, what, like maybe a quarter and a half?
Let me see if I can find in the...
I don't know if as minutes labeled at all.
Yeah, I'm trying to see if...
But it's like, I mean, like
when a substitution happens.
Just take the chance. Like, I understand Cannon's taking their shot with Curse a little bit more because they put him in for a full game and he won the game. And so it makes sense to keep him there. But, I mean, you got to make some changes when.
Yeah.
There's got to be something you can do. Like, I mean, I'm looking back at the Redwoods game. Like,
Alice had their most turnovers, I think, this season too. In this game against Cannons, 24 turnovers. You're not going to win a game. You're not going to win, especially when Cannons were playing as precise as they were. And 14 of the turnovers that were committed by Atlas were caused turnovers from the Cannons versus 6 caused turnovers from Atlas, which when you think of Atlas, you're thinking of the guys like Rexroth, Danny Logan, Tucker Durkin causing turnovers and being those guys that are physical and going out there and getting the ball for your squad. To come away with 6 caused turnovers in this game, that's pathetic.
I mean,
from the standard that those guys would say that, like, that's the standard they have for themselves as being like those game wreckers and going out there and getting caused turnovers and creating opportunities for their team to get the ball. They would say that only getting 6 caused turnovers is pathetic to their standards. I can guarantee.
I mean,
that.
Yeah, no, it's not great whatsoever. And they gave up. Let's see.
Cannon's shot on goal percentage, too, was 72.9.
They gave up a 6-goal run at the end of quarter 2. They gave up a 4-goal run at the beginning of quarter 4. All of this when Trevor absolutely raked the face off.
And you know what's crazy, too, in this game? That, like, when I was looking at the stats after, when I was getting ready for the press conference, obviously, we got to say, shout-out to the boy, Marcus Holman, Mr. 300. Mr. 301 himself. Unbelievable accomplishment. It's only going to keep going up. Proud of the boy. The fact that this game, like, the storyline was Cannons beat Atlas for the first time. This is the first time Cannons have beat Atlas, too, in their PLL history. Marcus Holman gets his 300th career goal. Everyone's talking about, you know, Trevor doing the thing again at the stripe, but then they lose. The quietest 7-point game in PLL history goes to Matt Cavanaugh. Like,
I don't,
Matt had 4 assists, and nobody was, like, blinking an eye.
I don't know if it was really the quietest one this weekend. Because do you know who else had 7 points with the exact same stat line?
Yeah, RP Tree.
RP Tree.
But I think his was a little more announced because he hit the assist goal for his
that's the only reason people knew.
But, like,
he gets
nobody talked about Cav. Even in the press conference, nobody talked about Cav whatsoever. And 7 points from Cav. Like, we talked about it a couple weeks ago when Cannons won in Columbus. We said, when Cav is good, the league is good. Like, Cav being good is good for the league. And, like, he's quietly doing this now. Like, what's he going to do when it's, like, in your face?
But that's the thing. I don't think he wants to be – I think that's the Cannons' motto now. Like, when you bring in guys like the Holmans, and it's just not about you anymore. It's about the entire program. It's about the team, the organization. Like, everybody has a quiet night. You know what I'm saying? Like, they all just go out there, do their job, and go home. Like,
they had 5 guys with at least 4 points in this game. And then 7 guys with at least 3 points. And then Bubba Fairman had 1. Come on, Bubba. Step your
everybody's
game up,
everybody's
step the
just,
game up. We need to get 3 points on the board, Bubba.
Everybody's just doing their part, and they don't care who has the most points that day. They don't care how much recognition
they let
get
Matt
for
Campbell
it.
Put a hattie on him.
You say like Matt Campbell ain't a beast.
I'm just saying.
Check his stats.
I know he's been. I mean, according to the one person who's banned on this podcast, he's the rookie of the year. That's one thing you should be thrilled that you missed this weekend. A broadcast, bro. Outside of JT, Jeremy Thompson being in the booth, which was the saving.
I heard some of that on the
need more of that. Old buddy that's banned on this podcast. Every single game, there was a new person that he was giving out like irresponsible
awards.
Gambling advice to people, being like, "Oh, this is who you should be voting for rookie of the year." It changed every game. Like, if somebody scored a goal, his mind changed.
I mean, if we want to be honest, there's a clear standpoint for rookie of the year.
And he kept saying, he was like, it's not going to be a defenseman. And it just kept changing. Like, I was like, what are we talking about?
It won't be. I think it's we might get our first ever face-off rookie of the year.
I agree with that. He's definitely going to be in the finalists for sure.
And if it's not him, it's going to be – wait, did TD win it? Why do I feel like TD won it? his rookie year.
No, because that was Teeter.
Okay. Okay. I just had to make sure. I thought I was tripping. If it's not him, it's going to be Tucker. Dordevic.
Yeah.
He's been insane.
Who said that? This
guy. Here we go. Here we go.
Hey, that's another dub for us.
I know. I'm talking.
Another pod dub. But yeah.
Matt Campbell. Like,
he switched from Matt Campbell to Tucker Dordevic to he even mentioned, what's his name? I'm blanking on his name that Whips just picked up. That they signed from the player pool that Chrome released.
Oh, Jack Myers.
Yeah. Jack scores his first goal. It's like, oh, he's going to put himself in the mix. Like, what are we fucking talking about? It was ridiculous. Don't listen to irresponsible gambling advice. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I mean, Matt Campbell's tied with for 11th with points. And with Mike Chanichuk and Logan Wisnowskis and Karen McArdle. He's got 11 points on the year, so pretty solid.
But could he be in the mix? Sure. Is he going to win it? No.
No. No.
Get your head out of your ass.
Please.
Shout out to Donnie, though. 4-point game. And Holman dropping the quote of the year about Jonathan Donville, saying he's a coach's dream.
Yeah. I mean, he is, man. He is. Kid can play both ways. Marcus extremely smart. That,
Donnie was the first person to text him when he signed with the Cannons.
That's dope. Like,
that's kind of cool.
That's dope.
Like, as somebody like he doesn't have to do that. And it's like, boom, there it is. Like, that's big team guy energy.
Huge team guy energy. He's that kind of guy. It's awesome, man.
Love seeing Ryan Drenner pop off in this game too, by the way.
Oh, any game that's Hope God is going is a good game. Like that.
4 points, two assists.
If I have to say, if there are two things that are very good for lacrosse, they're both happening this year. Ryder being good and Ryan Drenner being good. It's something about their aura as players, their makeup, how they present to the world, just everything about them. The sport takes another level, and it's because they're so polar opposite, right? Mm-hmm. Ryan Drenner never says anything, isn't really on social media, isn't super loud and boisterous, doesn't really like celebrate large.
No coincidence that both of those guys are friends of the program.
Right? It very similar to us. You're like more on the chill side, and I'm kind of like boisterous and out here. Like Ryder. Like Ryder scores and he's in your face. So they're just the two opposite ends of the spectrum and just show how good you can be on opposite sides. Sure, you can be the quiet, humble guy who just goes out, does his job, does a few hand slaps, and gets off the field. Or you can be Ryder, who's like, I'm going to do this, this, and then do something that I absolutely shouldn't be able to do, and then scream in your face and tell you that you suck.
No free ads, but that Dude Wipes partnership that the PLL announced, the only thing that's been playing on repeat in my head the last 20-ish hours is Ryder just saying, you stink.
Because I can imagine how many times he said that to someone on the field. Oh, man, you stink, dude. I just walked right by you. Like, I couldn't imagine even who was guarding him. Probably, I think it was Matt Dunn.
No, I think it was Jared.
Well, that specific time, yeah. But I think this Water Dog or this Whip Snakes game this year, Matt Dunn guarded him. Mm. And he had – no, because Dunn had – what's his face? He got their other pull. Not Muller.
Bryce?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bryce hates short guys.
And I can only imagine Ryder said you stink when he had that one-hander.
You stink.
Like what else do you say to a guy after you do something like that? Huh?
You smell your armpits and make sure you don't stink.
Yeah. Or like, what did he say to Rex Road?
Good night.
What did he say to Rex Road? That is what
I need. Drop the tapes.
Please.
Speaking of the Redwoods, big win over Chaos, 13-8. Some very interesting and fun quotes in the press conference after the game. Nat said, outside of we know how we live in after a Redwoods win, they thought and debated about starting Timmy Troutner in this game because of his career success against Chaos. And if you go back and look, Timmy's best games of his career have come against chaos. So it was something they like talked about, but they said Jack felt good. Jack looked good in practice, so they just went with Jack. But I don't hate that mindset of like, we have options. Let's look at the data, and if it adds up, we can go with something that works for us. So I don't hate that mindset from the coaching staff. And then all-time quote, Andy Towers saying that Ian MacKay is a Swiss Army machete.
I mean,
to
he's
which
not
Jared Newman responded, I didn't know they made those. And then Andy Towers saying that he is the prototype.
Yes.
The Mickey 55.
What else do you call him? Like, he's not a knife. He's not. He's just, he's too
That's not
much.
A knife. This is a knife.
He's just too much for a knife, yo. Like, Brian Tevlin, knife. Swiss Army knife.
That's not
Ian
a knife.
McKay,
That's
machete.
A knife.
Like, seriously, though, because, like, he's just.
Greatest quote ever.
He's a maniac. Machete fits.
Yet
him.
Somehow he's not an all-star.
All I can think is because he
hang
didn't
up
play
and listen.
He didn't play a few games. Because like
I voted for the boy.
I did
too. You at home vote for the boy?
It's
drop
the
it in the
YouTube
comment section.
I think it's the lack of stats. It's like the way they show everything when you're voting for this kind of stuff is like the people with the stats that have the best stats are right at the top. So like people are like immediately looking at the stats and they pick that. And when he missed two games.
You know what I say to those people? Boo those men and women. Boo.
Throwing tomatoes.
Big win for the Woods, though. Ryder kind of pulling away as MVP favorite through the first half. I did like Hutton's tweet, though. I don't know if you saw it. He said, I know Ryder's going to get the look at MVP, but he's making the argument that Rob could be MVP this year, too. I could see it depending on how the rest of his season goes. I don't hate the argument because Rob is easily having one of the best years of his career in the PLL. If not,
okay, I will run this through for you. And okay, so both four games played. One has 21 points. The other has 18. One has 18 1-point goals. The other has 8. One has 3 assists and the other has 10. One has 30 shots. The other has 32. One is shooting 60%. The other 25. One has 22 shots on goal. One is 18. 73.3% shot on goal to 56.3%. One has 1 2-point shot on goal or 1 2-point shot, not on goal, didn't go in. One has 3 turnovers. The other has 13. One has 6 ground balls. The other has 8. One has 2 penalties. The other has 1. And one has 1 power play shot and goal. The other has 0.
Also, can we talk about this is the first time the Redwoods had a power play opportunity this past week? That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And Ryder scored it. He was the one power play goal.
Power play. They had 2, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Maybe. But it's hard
the first
to say
that they had a man up opportunity all year.
It's hard to say which one of those players deserves.
Number one was Ryder, though, right? The 18.
Yes. Years. Yep. All the first numbers were Ryder.
13 turnovers.
Yeah. Ooh. 13 turnovers, and I mean Ryder shooting 60% on the year is crazy. Yeah. And with 73% of those on net is also asinine. Like, I mean, right now my front runner is Ryder, but I could see it going to Robert T as well.
Yeah, we'll maybe. say 2 power plays.
And maybe Sisselberger slides in. I'm going to take a look at Sisselberger's stats real quick.
They're bonkers. But yeah, good win for the Redwoods. Chaos will be fine. They still, this was, you know, one of those blips on the radar for them. I think Redwoods just played them very well across the board. And they were missing Jack, and they had some new guys in the lineup this week, and I think they'll be fine. I'm not concerned whatsoever about Chaos. They look good, and this is, again, I hate to do it, but Joe Keegan did this to everybody. Saying it was going to be a struggle for Chaos to score 7 goals in a game this year, they've done it in every single game this year.
Yep.
That clip at the end of the year is going to be electric.
Did you see the predictor question for this week?
Yeah.
What's going to be higher? There was two of them. The Marcus Holman and the Eras Tour for Taylor Swift, the set being longer.
Marcus.
Oh, the easy. And then the other one was Jeff Teach shot percentage or Chaos Fans. And when I looked, Chaos Fans were at like 53 or something. And I was like, slam that. That's definitely going to be higher. I mean, Jeff Teat's fantastic, but like, I don't think he's, it's Blaze. I don't think he's going to have
an insane shooting just day. Because I think it's going to level out unless people are just like, oh, we're going to vote for Chaos to make this a.
Maybe I mean, that would
bad for everybody, which would be hilarious.
I mean, that or it's just an easy predictor for everybody if everybody picks Chaos. We get one free predictor question.
I have to give a shout out to Will Bowen. Did you see that clip of him giving his jersey to the fan?
Yeah.
All time crying in the club moment. Shout out Will Bowen. Like, you're a rookie and you're doing that. Like, that's really cool stuff. Also, the jerseys looked fantastic. I don't know about you, Deej. I took advantage of the 20% code and I ordered a Redwoods one.
I don't blame you.
Had to add it to the collection.
I did not. I thought they were really nice. I think my biggest thing, especially with jerseys, is that like I kind of have to see them in person first before I buy one for myself. And I obviously didn't have that opportunity. I was this close. I will say that. I was probably, I don't know, like 5 hours from Mini. Down in Chicago, in Illinois.
Number 11, Bennett, like I always do, because I'm not getting traded.
but yeah, I was down in.
And they dropped that 20% off code on Monday, and I was like, okay, you got me. It was $80. Can't beat it.
Yeah, I was down in Illinois coaching for the weekend. So I was this close to going to Mini, but. I just couldn't make it. And I loved them, though.
They look
I thought
great
the design
TV
was great.
They did look easily, really good. I think across the board, those are the best jerseys for every team this year.
Probably.
Like look-wise and, like, the way that the colors were used. The only gripe I had was they were not broadcaster-friendly. You had to know numbers. You couldn't know names because the names were real small.
Yeah.
But everything else, they look gorgeous on TV.
Why does this keep happening? My fantasy team won't reset.
I think there's something going on with the back end of the app and the website, because I just clicked on trying to see stats at one point and said there was a 503 server error. So, last bit here, Archer's big win against Whip Snakes, 15-12. Good win for the Archers. They looked fine without Deeso, without Grant. Not much to say in that one. The Archers are still very, very good. Chris Bates dropped an all-time quote that got picked up by the face-off believers and truthers by me on socials, where he said Sisselberger's performance in this game showed why face-offs are valuable. Because they were. He did the exact thing that you said was possible, was he was going to make Petey LaSalle look mortal, and he absolutely did.
Yeah, I mean, that, and it's just face-offs are very important to the game. Like, even though they've done the 32-second shot clock to neutralize them, and they've put a lot of double pulls, and there's so many ways to, like, neutralize the face-off. Like, let's be honest here. Getting possession is the main point of the game. Face-offs are huge in that. Ground balls
Pressler
are huge
said that
in that,
too, which was a great quote from him. He said, he stopped. I think it was Dan asked the question about, like, teams conceding face-offs and everything. And he said, I want to stop you right there. We're playing a professional sport. Do you ever want to concede any aspect of the game?
No.
No.
It's too important, no matter what aspect of the game it is. Like, sure, there are plays you can concede. You know, like, you can be in a game, and especially playing, you know, they play Cannons. You can concede a short stick matchup on Matt Kavanaugh. That is something you can concede within the game. But you're not going to go out and say, okay, we're just going to let you win this faceoff. Mm-hmm. No, because the whole point of the game is to get possession. Sisselberger he's just showing how important that was for the Archers. They had Bones, and they've gone through a couple different people. And they haven't quite been able to get it done.
They get Sisselberger. Here he is playing basically exactly like a lot of the faceoff men we've seen in the past between Greg, Trevor, TD, being able to win it, go forward, play a little D, make it rough. You know, Jake Wivers, whatever the case may be, he's doing what you need in the faceoff game. And now the Archers' offense has elevated even more, which is crazy to hear. Like, their offense is already so high, but now they're at the point to where it's almost unstoppable because they can play make and take it, or they can be down a few goals and be right back into it because they're getting the ball at the faceoff X now, something they weren't doing before. And we're seeing it have a very positive impact on the team as a whole. So, like, I think faceoffs are extremely important and people have to stop acting like they're not, because possession is the whole point of the game. Like, sure, you don't need to win faceoffs to win, but if you are winning them, you're in a better chance of winning. Mm-hmm. It's just facts.
So,
well, not completely. Atlas. Trevor's been raking faceoff all year, and they just can't seem to put it all together.
Connor Farrell, too.
Well, we've talked about their problems and why that isn't working. Looking at Atlas, like, realistically, there's no reason it shouldn't work. Mm-hmm. Except maybe Jack Kincannon coming back from injury and not really being 100%. But like I said, put in Drake Porter, and maybe your problems are answered. But I'm not the coach over there. That's Presser's job. He'll get it figured out.
All in, you know what I'm saying?
I can't wait to talk to you about that. I think you know what I'm talking about. Speaking of All In and documentaries.
Oh, yeah. Final look before we get into the All-Star rosters. The table looks like this. Archers at the top of the table at 3-1 with a 6-score differential. Water Dogs at 3-1 with a 4-score differential. Redwoods at 3-1 with a 0-score differential. Cannons and Chaos both at 2-2, but Cannons are in fourth place, so they'd be in the Champ Series with a +4. Chaos with a 0-score differential. Whipsnakes at 1-3, but a +2-score differential. Atlas at 1-3 with a -8-score differential. And Chrome at 1-3, also with a -8-score differential, which I think the tiebreaker there is that Atlas has scored more goals than Chrome. So let's get into the All-Star rosters. These have been announced. Pulling it up right here. So the veterans. Also, I don't think I talked about it enough when we did do our All-Star Game banter. I love this format and realize that this is the first time they didn't do a draft. I'm so sick and tired of All-Star teams being like draft style. It got so boring after like 2 years of the NBA doing it. So I like this format a lot. I also would love to see eventually like World versus US once we expand to a full weekend of like a Rising Stars game like the NBA does of World versus US. That would be very fun. But the veterans roster and coaching staff looks like this. Head coach Andy Towers, assistant coach Tim Sudan, and your veterans roster on the attack line. It's RP3, Matt Rambo, Josh Byrne, Marcus Holman, Ryder Garnsey. Your midfielders, Tom Schreiber, Dane Smith, Zach Currier, Brian Costabile. Your short stick D-middies, Mike Messenger, Zach Goodrich. Your face-off specialists, Trevor Baptiste, Connor Farrell. Your LSM, Michael Earhart. Your defense, Matt Dunn, Jared Newman, Mike Manley, Jack Rowlett. Your goalies, Blaze Reardon, Kyle Burnlore. Connor Kelly was also voted in, but he is listed as out, so he won't be playing in the All-Star game. So we'll see who the replacement is for CK Fody. And then your Rising Stars roster, head coach Andy Copeland, assistant coach Nat St. Laurent. Looks like this. Your attack line, Michael Sowers, Logan Wisnowskis, Chris Gray, Asher Nolting, Mac O'Keefe. Your midfield, Tucker Dordovic, Nekai Montgomery, Matt Campbell, Matt Moore. Your LSM, the boy, Mr. 39 Days, one soul survivor himself, Colin Squires. Your short stick.
But also Brett Maker.
Oh, yeah, Brett Maker as well. I don't know why I thought he was listed at defense on the.
Probably should be.
Probably. It's probably an error. Danny Logan, Ryan Tarafenko, your short stick D middies, your face-off specialist TD, and Mikey Sis. Your defense, JT Giles-Harris, Gavin Adler, Will Bowen, and your goalies, Colin Kurst, Brett Dobson. Jeff Teat also voted in, but he's listed as out, so Jeff Teat not in the All-Star game, but voted in as an All-Star.
Do we think he's out just because Connor Kelly's out? Like, are they just making it even? Because, like, I'm so confused why he's not playing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because he's not hurt.
I don't know. Unless he's got a scheduling conflict or something.
Well, who does that? How are you Jeff Teat and you do a scheduling conflict during All-Star weekend? You're Jeff Teat. You know you're going to the All-Star weekend. So now we can hop on this bandwagon first and just throw it out there. Hashtag, where's Jeff Teat?
Hashtag, where's Teat?
Because why?
Yeah. Very interesting.
Hashtag searching for Teater on Twitter.
I want to see if anybody like responded or quote tweeted.
It's like, I don't understand why he wouldn't be playing.
This is very funny and kind of agree with it.
No Karen McArdle?
No, not even that, but yes. Somebody, Kelsey Dunn on Twitter, at Kelsey_Dunn11. Wisnowski is making it over Jackson Merrill as a criminal offense. Yep. Because you guys know how I was in 2021. If Jackson made the All-Star game, I was buying his jersey. Because that's the boy. That's my guy. That is crazy.
Grant Delvecchio thinks Matt Campbell's Rookie of the Year finalist as well.
Who do you think got snubbed? I have five in mind. Granted, I don't know who I would replace. I'm just saying names that, like, they feel all-star worthy with their place. Also, homie that's banned on this podcast was saying that he's potentially taking into account the second half of last season to put into his all-star voting. Buddy, it's a 2023 all-star game. Last year is out the window. It does not matter. Yeah. Be lucky your ears were not bleeding like mine.
I would have muted the TV. I mean, Mickey, for sure. Hold on. It's hard to tell. It's like, I mean, there haven't been, like, maybe Cav. I feel like Cav has had a really good year.
Mm-hmm. I didn't even have Cav, like, in my brain of the list, but yes, agree. I think Jackson Merrill got snubbed because he's having a phenomenal year.
Yeah, Jackson. I probably would have put him in over
Logan.
Over Logan, yeah.
I think Ian got snubbed, but we all know why he got snubbed. I think KJ got snubbed a little bit. I think KJ. This past week was the first week he missed, which is kind of. I hope it was, like, just recovering from World Games.
Trenner.
Because KJ missing Indigenous Heritage Weekend.
Trenner.
Also, Treasy. Treasy's having a phenomenal year. And sure, like, Danny Logan, Ryan Tarafanko, you can't argue with that, but, like, Treasy's having a hard hat award type of year.
And as much as I don't want to say this, Bryce Young, He's had a really good year. He's been the best Whipsnakes defender all year, both point-wise and just, like, production-wise.
Bryce is that dude.
Bryce has been fantastic this year. I mean, we can always say Epp got...
Kieran got snubbed. I think Epp definitely deserved.
We can always say Epp gets snubbed if he doesn't make something. I mean, we've talked about it a handful of times with Nat. Like, it's really just more of his reputation at this point is why he doesn't get things. And it really sucks because after a while, you kind of just got to give a guy his flowers because he's balling. Could put Rex Road in there, too.
How many games has Rambo missed this year? just the one.
That I know
also,
of, yeah.
He's also the leading scorer for the Whips still, so.
Yeah.
I don't really have any complaints about the attack group per se for the Vets.
Oh, other than, I don't know. I say Cav was the only person I said could have possibly. Cav and Kieran, but when you look at this lineup, it's hard to squeeze them in there.
Mm-hmm.
Because Rob Ryder.
I think the biggest one that is glaring to me, though, is Latrell Harris.
Yeah.
And Jackson Merrill. I think those two were very much deserving. Who knows who, if they
to me, a
replacement for Connor Kelly and Jeff Teat. But.
So, yeah, I say maybe replace. And I say with a short stick D mid for both sides. Only running two is kind of crazy. I personally would have.
In his tweet that you sent me.
Yeah, for me, I personally would have swapped Jackson Merrill for Logan and put Jackson in over Logan, and then I would run three D-mids instead of five mids.
Mm-hmm.
Just a lot of those D-mids can go two ways anyway, especially a guy like Mickey, so you can play him on offense if you need to. But I think it's and we're seeing a lot of it in the regular season, too. Teams that are running three short stick D mids are the ones that are being very successful. 3 to 4, outside of Chrome.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Mike Messenger has been successful in that role. So it's not like that isn't working for all teams in terms of playing that many short stick D mids. It's just some teams aren't getting the wins to a lot that that system is working.
Someone quote tweeted the veterans graphic and said, basically a team of active Hall of Famers pray for the Rising Stars team. Oh, Graham Hossick snubbed.
Yeah, he's another one of those that's just, like, expected. So, it like, kind of went right over my head. Yeah, half the Chaos team is on the veterans roster.
Also, the fact that Andy Towers is coaching Mike Messenger is going to be
insane.
As Shemlax on Twitter said, oh, the carnage. So, yeah, let us know your all-star roster takes in the YouTube comment section, and let us know who you think got snubbed. But, Deej, let's get into a quick Fairfield preview. It's brought to you by our friends over at Tomahawk Shades, the best small batch eyewear in the game. You guys, they got the sunglasses, the blue light glasses. You know, Deej and I are rocking our Tomahawk Shades all summer long when we're on the road. We're wearing the blue light glasses when we're watching PLL games as well when we're at home. You guys can do the same. Go to TomahawkShades.com, and when you go to checkout, use promo code USP for 25% off at checkout. That's an unbelievable promo code. Nobody gets those like that in the podcast game. That's how you know Tomahawk Shades is the best. Go to TomahawkShades.com, promo code USP for 25% off your order. These are the matchups we have this weekend, Deej. All night games in Fairfield. We got Friday again and Saturday, Sunday. What? But no Sunday, just Friday again. Friday night, LAX, 6 p.m., Water Dogs, Whip Snakes, probably another 11-10 final score like we typically get with these two. Then the nightcap, 8:30 p.m., Archers, Redwoods for a potential shot at first place, depending on how game one goes. Then on Saturday, the game of the week on ESPN2 is Chrome Cannons, followed by the nightcap, 8:30 p.m., Atlas Chaos. Final weekend before All-Star break. Archers Redwoods is going to be a movie. I'm excited for that game. I'm excited for Water Dogs Whips because they always play each other tough. It's always gritty. I'm excited to watch the Cannons just continue to roll. I love how they're playing right now. They're just playing loose and, like, having fun, which I feel like Cannons have failed to do over the past couple of seasons. And then Atlas Chaos is just going to be very, very interesting from the Atlas perspective.
We obviously know game of the week. It's the only one that has two teams vying for first place. And the one I'm most excited about is Redwoods Archers.
being able to see the battle at the stripe between TD and Sisselberger and how he handles that matchup. I think this will be the first time Sisselberger goes against like a true vet, mm-hmm. and is able to kind of test his skill against the best of the PLL. I think he still has a matchup with Trevor at some point this year as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, seeing those two are going to be fun to watch. And then this one's going to come down to goalie play, in my opinion. Jack Kelly versus Brett Dobson, both have been very good this year. Both are big parts of the reason why their teams are 3-1. Obviously, I'm giving the slight edge to the Redwoods, mostly because of Ryder and Rob and what they've done this year. They're 1-2 in the point totals this year. So sorry,
I was just looking at the Instagram posts of the All-Star Game rosters. Jake Caraway commented, old head at Brian Costabile.
Costa's not even that old. I'm screaming, yo.
Caraway's funny as hell, bro.
He is, bro. But yeah, also really excited for Water Dogs Whip Snakes. Water Dogs are 2-1 against the Whip Snakes right now. They won the first two matchups 11-10, lost the last matchup 12-11. Totally, I mean, that one's going to be back and forth. And I give the slight edge to Water Dogs, mostly because of defenses. I like the Water Dogs have a more intact D, especially since the Whip Snakes are without Matt Dunn and most likely Michael Earhart as well. There's just going to be too much space and opportunity for the Water Dogs offense to operate.
Whip Snakes won in week two last year, 12-11 over the Water Dogs. And then Water Dogs got their get back right before the All-Star break. 11-10 in Baltimore. That game was crazy. Or no, I'm sorry, that was in Minnesota. The Water Dogs one, because that was the fireworks game.
July 2nd, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they beat them going into
to go to the championship.
Oh, they played three times last year. Wow.
11-10, they won to go to the championship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but still.
Dogs have won the last two. And that 12-11 game that that Whip Snakes won was overtime.
Not surprised. See if
the rivalry continues. I like those teams going head-to-head, too. It's always a fun matchup. It's very similar to me, like, when Redwoods play Chaos is what Water Dogs Whips is, or kind of like when Archers and Whips play each other. It's kind of that similar vibe. So we'll see if that continues. Plus, we get Sowers versus Bryce Young, the originator of Short King hating.
That's going to be fun. I'm really excited to kind of just see that offense work against that battered defense and kind of what the matchups are going to be for that defense, who they put out. Obviously, they're going to put out Tim Muller and Bryce Young, but who gets that third spot? Where do they put them? How do they do the matchups? Like, all of that is going to be really intriguing to me as a B guy. But then the other two games are strictly panic button games for me. If the 2-1 and 3 teams lose, it's panic button time, and we got to start asking some hard hitting questions and trying to figure some things out. 3-1 and 3
teams lose.
Well, to me, the Whip Snakes are in a position where it's just injuries that are really holding them back, in my opinion. And it may not even
how it, like I think the way they lose would be the way to assess it.
Yeah, but I don't think it's panic button time for them yet. At all. I don't think it's close. I think because, like, they've been, even their losses this year have been close. Like, they're not outside getting blown out. Week. Yeah, outside this
like, past it was three weekend, goals, but, like, you could tell the Archers, like,
had them by the throat. Yeah. But, like, that hasn't been the case for them most of the year. So, like, they're there and they can make it happen. They just aren't necessarily doing it. They're, like, missing that one piece. So, like, I'm not as His quick to hit Brad the panic Smith. Button on them. But,
also, what did you make of Joe Keegan's tweet slash article of potentially like Heacock or Miles getting traded at the deadline. I could see Wibbs swinging a trade for Colin Heacock. If Chrome continue to fall the way they are.
But who are they sending?
Name your price.
You know what I'm saying? They're not giving up Tucker.
Here's Jack Myers back.
I don't think they want that. I don't think that's going to happen.
I could see that happening, though, because then you reunite Heacock with the Maryland boys up over there, and him and Rambo obviously have history. And
I see Miles getting shipped first. I'm shipping
another Redwoods midfielder, but that's just me.
Ooh, Surge?
Yeah.
I don't know if you can ship Surge. Miles still has something left in the tank, and like you can get stuff from Miles because of what he offers outside of shooting. Like Surge is really only known for his dodging and shooting, and he hasn't done that well in the last 2.5 years.
Can we get the ever elusive all star trade prospect cash considerations,
or a draft pick? Right. Does somebody want to trade us their number one overall pick for Miles Jones? Fuck it, you can have them both. You can have Sergio Perkovic too.
I think Miles is going to be okay. Like,
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I think Miles is more is better suited to like figure things out this year than Surge. Like, I think Surge is just needs to take a seat.
I don't know, man. Miles seems lost. Like, he doesn't even dodge anymore. He literally just stands there.
He had a good game this past week, so that was encouraging.
What's it? Really? Or did he just score one goal and now people think it's a decent game?
No, I think he played better than weeks past this past week, which was encouraging.
But
Surge,
I mean,
though, has just been like in a
that's expected. Void. That's expected with Miles when he plays Chaos. He always has a decent game against Chaos.
I think Surge is a lost cause this year. No offense to him, but
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you.
I feel like the jump around song. Pack it up, pack it in.
Well, like my thing with Surge is I would just let him go. I would just stop putting him on the roster for like Colin. Or not Colin, the other Curse. Well, the Curse.
For Curse, for Tevlin, like.
Yeah, and just let him go in the player pool because like, you're not really going to get anything back for Surge anyway. That's the only reason I say trade Miles. Not that I don't want Miles to do well and I don't want him on the Redwoods, but
I think
he's got 1 point on the year. It was the one goal from last weekend. He has 6 shots and he's shooting 16.7%. It says he has, well, that was just last week and he had no turnovers. But like, if we look at him for the year,
I think the thing with Miles, if I'm not mistaken,
he's got 3 points. All of them are goals, no assists. He's shooting 19% on 16 shots. He has 4 two-point shot goals. I mean, he is shooting 69% on goal, but he can't score.
Here's three ground balls,
2 turnovers.
Here's my argument. Miles is doing all that. He's also signed through 2024. So if you're another team, are you going to want to trade for another year potentially of that? Or are you like, oh, hey, let's go trade for Sergio Perkovic, who's a free agent after the year. We won't have to pay him. And maybe he's, you know, a piece that bolsters our midfield with a change of scenery.
Like who? Who needs him right now?
I'm just saying, like, from that aspect. Like,
well, yeah,
but an expiring contract versus Miles having another year.
That's a standpoint to look at, but I just don't think – there's no team who needs a shooting threat. It's all Surge is a deep shot threat. He doesn't dodge anymore. He doesn't have the vision that Miles has. Like, that's the only reason I say trade Miles. Like, he's a more complete player than Surge. There's more to offer there, which means the package that you're possible to get is larger.
Yeah, Surge has a 0 shooting percentage this year.
And all he's known for is how well he can shoot the ball.
13 shots and 1 2-point shot.
And all he's known for is how well he can shoot the ball. So, like, what else do you have to offer when you trade Surge? Nothing. There's no, like, you can't make anybody bite on Surge. That's why I said we should have traded him this summer. We should just kicking around his name.
Should have tried him 2 years ago.
Or then.
After he had 24 points.
That's why I said we should have went and got Jake Caraway. Look at him now. That's so funny. Over on the Water Dogs, going nuts.
Hashtag, is Surge cooked? Leave it in the YouTube comment section.
I'm screaming.
Let's get into our picks, Deej. Let's feed some ducks.
Let's feed them, baby.
It's the PLL Fairfield Picks of the Week, powered by Trophy Smack. There's no better way to upgrade your fantasy smack talk than with our friends over at Trophy Smack. They got the belts, the rings, the metal wall art, and of course, trophies. They've also got last place trophies. My Fantasy Football League just upgraded our trophy with Trophy Smack. You can do the same. Go to trophysmack.com/underground. Link is in the description to upgrade your fantasy smack talk today. Get your PLL fantasy group a trophy. If it's you and the pals, get yourself a trophy. Go to trophysmack.com/underground to upgrade your fantasy smack talk today. Deej, let's start with the first game of the weekend in Fairfield. It is going to be Water Dogs, Whip Snakes. How do you see this one playing out?
Water Dogs 12-11.
he's even mostly because score.
Mostly because I said they would score more than 11 points this weekend in the predictor. So that's the only reason I put the score out there. I just don't think the Whip Snakes have enough, especially with their defensive last right now. Possibly no Matt Rambo as well. They're going to have some problems getting the ball. They're going to have some problems keeping it, scoring, like all those things. But that doesn't mean they won't figure it out in some way. They do still have Zeddy Ballgame. Tucker Dordovic has been great. Mike Chanichuk, et cetera. Will Manny. So they're going to be able to figure some things out and be decent. I just don't think they have enough for a win.
Also, we're back even in the pick standings because I went 4-0 last week. Shout out to the Boom Squad. I'm also going with the Water Ducks. I just like the way they're playing right now. They're playing as a cohesive unit, and their offense is getting figured out now from their perspective of figuring things out. So give me the Dawgs. Archers Redwoods, our game of the week. This one's going to be very fun. This like has like first half of the season championship game preview type of things. If things go well for both of these teams down the stretch, like they could potentially. Archers are playing very well offensively. Defensively, they're playing great. Dobber's unbelievable this year. He's going to be up for goalie of the year candidacy, no doubt in my mind. I think the interesting aspect of this matchup is just how well, and I brought this up to Coach Bates in the press conference, just how well the short stick D middies are playing for the Archers. I like the way that they're playing, so that's going to be an interesting like matchup to watch in this game, is how the short sticks approach the Redwoods, led by Treasy, obviously, and then, as they call them, the young pups. Sis versus TD is going to be a great matchup. Nobody's conceding face-offs there. But I think the Redwoods pull off a close win.
I'm glad I didn't have to call you out for being a traitor. But this game is going to be extremely intriguing. Extremely intriguing. Down to Redwoods D versus Archers O. You know, does Eddie Glazner pull the Mac O'Keefe matchup? Or does Garrett Eppel get Connor Fields? What do they do down there? How does Chad Kelly do with these shots? To who do they put the pole on in the midfield, and how the short sticks play to the middle of the field? Sis versus TD. We've talked about it a little bit. That's probably going to be, if not 1A, 1B stripe matchups this year, maybe 1C. I think when we look at it, you got to put, there's going to be four guys. So I shouldn't say 1A, 1B. There's going to be four guys that give you very good matchups every time they go against each other. It's going to be Max Adler, Mike Sisselberger, Charter Baptiste, and TD Irwin. So anytime you have those four guys matched up with one another, it's going to be a good time. It's going to be a battle, lots of ground balls, and will make a huge difference in the game. That's going to be one thing to watch. Then you have the flip side. You have the Redwoods O against the Archers D. Graham Hossick, Matt McMahon. Who's their third pole? I feel like I know this too. And it's like right on the tip.
Warren Jeffrey.
Yeah, Warren Jeffrey. You know, is Graham Hossick taking Rob? Probably most likely. So what do they do with Matt McMahon and Warren Jeffrey? And who gets Westbury and who gets Ryder? And are you able to stop Ryder? That's the biggest question of the year. You stop Ryder, you stop the Redwoods. But
I think it'll be McMahon on Ryder. I think that's what
I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
Correctly. I forget what they did last year. Obviously, Warren Jeffrey wasn't playing last year because he was injured.
And neither was Westbury. It was very easy to match up against the Redwoods when they had three outside Dodgers.
That makes more sense, too, because Warren Jeffrey matches up with Westbury in the NLL.
Yeah. And, I mean, just not having the outside Dodgers made things really easy playing against the Redwoods, and I think that's been the best part about this Redwoods offense. What's made it so difficult for teams is they now have that inside threat with Westbury, so you can't just leave a Dodger and go play hard on Ryder and double team or play hard on Rob. You have to acknowledge and respect Westbury on the inside, or he'll tear you up like we saw week one with Atlas, where he had some three or four goals right off the bat. So I'm really intrigued to see all of the matchups around. But the key to this game is the Ryder matchup. You stop Ryder, you stop the Woods, and I don't think anyone in the league right now can stop Ryder Grimes. So I got to give it to the Woods.
Then we move to the league's game of the week, ESPN2 on Saturday, 6 p.m. Chrome Cannons. I hate to bring it to everybody. I know Chrome have become my like little adopted babies. Cannons are giving me no reason to pick against them right now. They are playing such fluid offense. Their defense has stepped up big time. Kirstie and Nett has been fantastic. There's no reason. And vibes right now, Coach Holman is a total vibe. And when your coach is vibing, your team is vibing. Deej can attest because he's winning trophies and he's vibing. Give me Cannons to get a big-time win on Saturday night. I think they are poised to be a team that will make the playoffs for the first time since 2021 when they made it. Got bounced, obviously, in the first round. But I think they're going to be poised to be competing for a championship series spot if they continue to play the way they are right now. I love their vibe. I love their energy. They're playing for each other, which I think is a first in PLL Cannons history. So give me the Cannons.
I'm going to have to agree with you. Mainly because Chrome just isn't in a good space. While this thing coming out of my mouth in a very long time, I only feel comfortable picking Chrome against the Whip Snakes right now.
Valid.
And if you know, you know basically why I feel that way.
And if you don't, you slow.
And literally. I don't think Chrome has anything to keep up with Cannons right now, even with getting their D guys back. I think the one thing they will win is the battle at the stripe. I think Connor Farrell definitely has an up on Stephen Kelly or Jake Fopp or the poll that they decide to put out there at the stripe. But that doesn't equate in wins as we've seen this year. So I think they'll still struggle to put the ball in the net, and Cannon's offense has been on fire, and they've made
stride.
Advantage. They've taken great advantage of the opportunities that they have when they get them. So as they get the ball, they're one of those teams, kind of like the Archers last year, where we were always wondering, you know, can they beat a team even though they don't have the face-off? And they were doing it consistently. Cannons are kind of in that same space right now where when they get the ball, they score. So if you're going to win face-offs and you're going to have the ball, you got to score, because when they get it, they're going to.
Final game of the weekend, Atlas Chaos. Wrap things up before we head to the All-Star break. I got to go with the Chaos boys. They're playing well. I like the way that everybody on that team is playing. And I just feel good about them right now. So give me Chaos.
I think I've only gotten one Atlas game right this year, and that was the first one when they lost to Redwoods. So back at it again with another L for the Bulls. And I'm gonna take Chaos. I really like the groove they're about to hit pretty soon. This is kind of that time of the year for them where they really start to put it together now that everybody's back. And you got dude, moving Dane Smith down to attack on a line with Menikus and Chase, not Chase Frazier, Josh Byrne is insane. That's going to push his production through the roof, and he's going to be in great position. And now it kind of allows you to get a Chase Frazier or a Chris Cloutier out of the box against a short stick. There's some two-man game. You can still run to get Dane with a short stick as well. I think it just opens up their offense a little bit more. So I'll be intrigued to see that, but I think Chaos definitely has this one handled.
Another person that I think got snubbed from the All-Star game, now I'm thinking about it too, Ryan Smith.
He's having I can take a look. Beautiful. I think it may just be his point production. It just may not be necessarily high enough for some people. You know what I'm saying?
That boy is scoring like every game and his highlight reel. He's on SportsCenter all the time.
Well, I mean, he's still getting outscored by Josh Byrne. He's got 14 and leading Chaos. Their next highest score is...
Ryan Smith has 9 points.
Yeah, 67%. So Ryan Smith is their next at 9. And Brian Menikus is right behind him at 8.
And he's shooting 83% on goal.
Ian and Dane both have 5. I mean, I'm not opposed to Ryan getting it. I think he's quite fantastic, and he's a guy I've consistently thought about putting on my fantasy team every week.
And you want to put it in perspective, too? Last year, Ryan Smith in 8 games, 13 points, 8 goals, 5 assists. This year, Ryan Smith, 4 games played, 9 points, which matches his rookie year, 8 goals, 1 assist.
Well, we do have
15 shots all last season, too. He's already got 12.
Well, I say we got to take into account he played attack for the first 2 games of the year and was the main ball handler. So, like, that does – not taking anything away from him.
But he's on pace to have, like, a career year.
Yeah, and he's going to because Tower's already said he's a roster every week kind of guy and will be getting play time and has gotten his opportunities, and he's stung. I think he's scored in every game this year so far. Yep. I'm going to double-check that. Yeah, so it's – I wouldn't not – give him the nod. He's picked up on ground balls, had decent
last 2 weeks turnover too, play. He's shot 100%.
I mean, 83% on goal, 67% on the year. He's only the only person whose numbers are even similar to that are Ryder. Mm-hmm. But Ryder's just taking a much larger percentage of shots, so his numbers are a little lower, but
yeah.
Production and things are the same. Ryan Smith, great year.
Yeah. Shout out Smithers. But those are our PLL Fairfield Picks of the Week powered by Trophy Smack. And Deej, the NLL trade winds are a-blowing. Yo-ho, yo-ho, to a new team, some of these players will go. We've had 2 big-time trades over the course of 24 hours that have happened. To put it in perspective here, also shout out Ryan Smith, just signed a new 2-year contract with the Nighthawks. These trades have been absolutely bonkos and have caught everybody on the timeline by surprise. The first one happened just a couple days ago. The Saskatchewan Rush involved in both of these trades. The Rush have traded franchise icon, arguably face of the franchise, one Mark Matthews, who I have a story about on the pod, to the Toronto Rock in exchange for one of my favorite players in the NLL, Shark Boy, Zach Mans, Adam J, and the Rock's first round selection in the 2023 entry draft, which is 12th overall. Wild trade. Not saying Mark Matthews is still not an elite caliber player, but to me, the Saskatchewan Rush won this trade.
I'm going to challenge you on that. One, to play devil's advocate, and two, because I just don't know. Zach Mann's fantastic talent and is young and is going to do great things for them in the transition game and helping Saskatchewan kind of close that gap that they've had in the last 2 years that I've been watching and covering the sport. Their transition game outside of Mike Messenger and Matty Beers has been very Matty Beers, which we'll talk about in a second, is no longer with the team. So this is a great supplement to add to Mike Messenger. I like the way Zach Mantz plays. He has very good D, good stick handles, and is just an overall great team guy. So I do agree with that move for Saskatchewan, but Toronto may have just gotten off a little bit better in this. We can see them play the Calgarys and the San Diegos, the Buffaloes. They're 1 point off all the time, 2 goals off, 3 goals off. I think it's just because they don't have enough offensively. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have 2 guys, 3 guys. Toronto, adding Mark Matthews, gives them a 4th. One more guy you have to worry about. Corey Small, Tom Schreiber, Chalen Rogers, and now Mark Matthews as well. Plus the rest of their offensive squad. The more, like, speaking of, perfect example was like Panther City going out and getting Callum Crawford in the middle of the year. Their offense was already really good, and they were winning games, and they were in position to make the playoffs. That just boosted their offense to the next level, added a layer, and made it harder for defenses to play against them because there was just one more name they had to worry about, especially a big name. And I feel like that this is kind of reminiscent to the Kevin Crawley, Curtis Dixon with San Diego. Like, oh, we're right there. We have all the pieces. We're just missing this. We think this is the one or two pieces that'll get us there. We saw them go out and get Mitch Disney last year. They were almost there, lost again to Buffalo. This, I think, is that move for them where they're like, hey, we know Mark Matthews is old, but we know what he brings to the game and how good he plays. We're going to go out and make this opportunity because in the next few years is our year. Because they're not necessarily young, but they're not old.
I think the Mark Matthews move for them is like, oh, Dan Dawson retired. That's what that says to me. Because, like, you look at their offense last year. They had the pieces in place. For whatever reason, Toronto just shrinks in the playoffs offensively. Don't know why, don't know how, because the talent is ridiculous. You look at their forward group last year. Marley Angus, Dan Craig, who stud. Josh Dalwick, Dan Dawson, Jameson Dilks, Stephen Keough, who they also went out and got last year in free agency. Zach Mans, Tom Schreiber, Corey Small. Plus you had Chalen Rogers, Chris Corbeil, Tyler Hendricks, Phil Mazzucca in transition, and all of those guys can contribute offensively.
Yeah.
Treasy, like, you know, they have guys that can score. Mitch Disnew can score defensively. Adam Jay, who just got traded in this deal too. I think that's a huge, and Brad Cree can score on the defensive side of things too. But I think the Adam Jay thing too is gonna go under the radar. He's so fucking good, and I'm so happy he's out of the East as somebody who supports the Philadelphia Wings. Like, that's a huge boost for them. But interesting trade, you know, I think
so.
I think Saskatchewan gets a lot back that's helping, you know, with this corresponding move that we're going to talk about, too.
Yeah, I think this is a very equal trade now that I'm really looking at it, because I think Toronto wins right away. But I think Saskatchewan wins long run. Mm-hmm. Like, Toronto's only going to get another 2-3 years max out of Mark, in my opinion. Like, he's just reaching that level. He's been playing for so long. He was doing both box and field. Like, he's just reaching that point where he, like, doesn't necessarily have the legs anymore to go. Not even his skill level, just the legs. So they're only going to get a couple more years out of him, but they're going to be very high-level years. He's going to produce. He's going to fit into that offense well.
Mark's 33.
So they have the chance. In January. They have the chance to kind of just take those shots at Buffalo and get into the NLL Cup and win it. In the next few years, I think that's what this move was really about, is, hey, we lost Dan, but we're going to still go balls to the walls with this thing, go get another vet and really push to make a cup run over the next couple of years. And then once some of these guys filter out, we'll try a new strategy with some new guys. But then on the other hand, the Rush get Jay and Mans, who are on the younger side, coming another in with the next trade pick that we'll talk about, with a first round pick, another guy that we'll talk about in the next trade with, you know, Mike Messenger and some of the other guys they already have there. they're in position to be pretty good in 4, 5, 6 years, maybe a little bit longer.
To which then Panther City trade Patrick Dodds and Cam Wengrenyuk to Saskatchewan in exchange for the 5th overall pick in the entry draft this year and the playing rights to Matt Beers, which means they have the negotiating rights because I believe Matty Beers is going to be a free agent when free agency opens, so they get the first negotiating rights to re-sign him now. This trade is crazy to me. Saskatchewan wins this trade, in my eyes, tenfold. You're getting Patrick Dodds, who's one of the most talented players in the league, young players in the league at that. You are not getting, if you're Panther City, you're not getting anyone nearly as talented as Patrick Dodds with the 5th overall pick in this draft. I'm sorry. It's a weird trade to me, weird flex. This move expedites that little timeline you just gave for Saskatchewan, in my book, because I believe Manns and Patrick Dodds have played together when they were younger. So they're building that core, and that's what Saskatchewan's GM does. It's like watches these guys develop elsewhere and then brings them together when they know each other and they're at their full potential. This makes Saskatchewan like one of those frisky, annoying young teams in the league. Very similar to what Calgary was last year. Like, Saskatchewan has the potential to be very good again, I think, in the next 3 years. Like, they still have pieces from last year. They still have leaders on that team. And to get Patrick Dodds and Zach Manns and Adam Jay all in a matter of 2 days is crazy. Plus, you move down 7 spots in the first round to get those guys on your roster. That's a huge win if you're Saskatchewan, in my book. Rush fans should be like, sure, you're upset Mark Matthews, the face of your franchise, is gone, but Rush fans should be doing backflips into a pool on a bright summer day right now because your team got better in the long run.
I like this move a lot more than the previous move for Saskatchewan. I don't dislike the last move. Like I said, I think it was an even trade and bolstered their roster. But this one is one that they win a lot. And Patrick Dodds is a player coming alongside Zach Manns, Adam Jay, Robert Church, et cetera. You are putting together a solid offensive lineup. And last year, Alex Bouquet played great in net for you, and your defense wasn't bad. The offense couldn't always get it done. So I think they're making moves to have a longevity offense in a system that has proven to work. We've seen their offense get taken by a lot of other teams in the league, and they run that system now, and it works for them as well. So all the pieces are coming together. They're just in a matter of who else can they get and how quickly do they gel together and work together. But they're definitely putting some pieces together to have a very good season.
Do you want to hear a piece of information that I just stumbled upon that makes absolutely no sense? Do you know who I'm older than in the pro lacrosse world?
A lot of people.
Fuck you. It's a name we just brought up. That's on the Saskatchewan roster. That's also a PLL All-Star this year.
Mike Messinger?
Yeah.
Really? Mess is what, 27?
Mike Messinger was born March 14th, 1994.
Nice.
That's absurd.
Why?
No offense to Mess, and I think this is the typical stereotype that bald guys just look older. Mess looks like he's in his mid-30s.
I mean, my assistant coach has me beat. I don't know what happened in college, but like, I like it. He like took his hat off for me in front of me for the first time. I said, Jake, what happened to your hair? And he's like, it's gone, bro.
He's just so mature and so nice. Like, he definitely looks like he has like 5 years on me. Coolest guy, though. I absolutely love him. But yeah, bald guys just look older.
Yeah.
And Messenger's also like got like a mug, which also makes you look older.
And a thick beard.
Yeah.
And the triangle war paint, looking like Braveheart.
Dude, the triangle war paint is just different, man.
That's wild. Let us know in the YouTube comment section, Apple Podcast reviews, your thoughts on these trades. But that's all we got for you guys. If, like I mentioned, if you're going to be in Fairfield, come say what's up. Hopefully it's kind of like last year and I'm on the sidelines again. That'd be very fun. We're gonna be giving you all the Fairfield goodness one way or another. So stay tuned for all of that. Be sure to follow us Twitter, Instagram, Threads, TikTok at OTBLaxPod, YouTube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. Subscribe to the podcast feed. Subscribe to the YouTube. If you don't want DJ to move to Alaska, he's in a holding home right now in Atlanta so that he doesn't move to Alaska. Get Deej home. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple and Spotify. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Need to get to 600 subscribers before the end of the month, too. We're at 515 right now. Need to get to 600. Need to get to 1,000 before September 4th. So go subscribe. Follow Deej on Twitter at @SCS_NextGreat. Follow me on Twitter at KBIZZL311, Instagram and Threads at KBIZZLE11, and on TikTok at KBUnderground. Get your merch, phiapparel.co, code underground, 10% off any and all merch orders. And this has been episode number 283 of the allegedly award-nominated, honorably mentioned, number 9 NCAA-ranked, viewable on YouTube, Outside the Box podcast, the official lacrosse podcast on the Underground Sports Philadelphia Podcast Network. For Deej, I'm KB. Let's have ourselves a weekend in Fairfield. We'll catch you guys next week getting into All-Star weekend. But until then, we're getting the heck out of here. Peace. It's gonna be hard work. You keep repeating that we can't catch trace.
And that's Outside the Box.